With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Free Will by Rush, lyrics inspired by the writings of Ayn Rand, which absolutely may have little to nothing to do with the Log Cabin Club, or everything to do with the Log Cabin Club, depending how you look at it. Matthew Crafty, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. We got Rance Collins in studio with us. You know Rance. We were all on a panel together for election
night.
He's good. He's actually just walking our last guest to the back to the reception area. He'll be back in a moment. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're having to do all of our guests from this point forward by telephone. We've been told here at Channel Q because
We were kind of thinking ahead on that.
Yeah, we were ahead of it. We had you already scheduled by telephone, but to minimize the contact. I think besides being a log cabin, are you an officer with the log cabin, Matthew?
So I'm state chairman. So I'm chairman of Log Cabin California. So I oversee the 10 chapters in the state of California.
State chairman of Log Cabin. Wonderful. And you are also a professor at Cal Lutheran. Is that right? And doing poli-sci or...
No, I was a poli-sci major at Cal Lutheran. I work now for UCLA. But in the external affairs and development area.
Now, I'm old enough. I've been in politics longer than the dear Rance Collins has been on the planet. Sorry, Rance. But it's true. And so... during the 80s, we had to work out HIV and AIDS policy, and I worked hand-in-hand with Log Cabin and their leadership at that time, Frank Ricciotti and Terry Hamilton and Marty Keller and Stan Barry and all these Log Cabin guys from all over the state. And we had a common enemy. We had a virus, and so we didn't have the luxury.
Right.
We would kid each other at lunch or coffee and rib each other about politics from time to time, but we actually had a common enemy that forced us to work together. And I haven't felt that same sort of relationship with Log Cabin as of late, and I guess it's because I loathe Donald Trump so much I can't even get my head around why anybody would want to support him. And so that's why we have you on the show, so we can reconnect and at least still remember we do have bigger common enemies like another virus out of control.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that, and it's a good point to bring up. I mean, if you think back to Log Cabin started in 77, and it started to as a way to defeat the Briggs Initiative, which would have kept openly gay teachers from teaching in schools if it had passed in California. And we worked with every different community that we could work with in the 80s to fight HIV because, it was bigger than politics. And
Log Cabin was helpful in getting Ronald Reagan to come out against Proposition 6, against the Briggs Initiative.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, what ended up happening was Proposition 6 was looking like it was going to pass. I mean, it was ahead in polling by a large margin.
And it would have banned gay men and lesbians from teaching in public schools. Right. That was the effort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, Reagan, who had a number of, openly gay Republican friends, those friends went to him and said, like, look, you carry a lot of clout with religious conservatives. We need you to come out and say something about this. And Reagan said, yeah, no, I totally agree. And so he came out very publicly and said, this is un-American. He encouraged everyone to vote against it. And really, in a very short period of time, the polling flipped. And And it lost by a large margin. And so one of the things that came out of that, though, was Reagan told his friends that, you know, they need to get organized because this is, these types of things will keep happening, because there was a backlash at that point to, equality for the LGBT community that was starting to happen in the 70s. And so that's really where the group was formed. And really, you know, I think there was a lot of working together with probably other groups like Stonewall and people in the community to fight, you know, when the AIDS crisis happened, working together on that. I think, you know, things started to get kind of polarized in the 90s when you had Pat Buchanan and some of those that came out and wanted to insert, you know, anti-gay language into the party platform. And that became more of a, it really put people in the corners of, if you're a Republican, you must not like gay people. And if you're a Democrat, you must like gay people. And that kind of, I think, started the, you know, you're my friend or you're my enemy way of viewing things. And then, you know, I think having a 24-hour news cycle like we have now that accentuates our differences, where people tune in to hear a viewpoint that speaks to what they already have, but probably hardens it a bit. If you hate Donald Trump, you know, tune into MSNBC and you will find 50 more reasons to hate him. If you love Donald Trump, you tune into Fox and you'll find 50 more reasons to love him. And if that's the America we're living in, no wonder, you know, we're having such a hard time viewing things the way that we used to, when we had 30 minutes of news and we had to cover all of the biggest news in the world and, you know, 30 minutes each day, back in the 80s and 90s. So, you know, I think that's a big part of it. Obviously, you know, President Trump is a polarizing figure. That's a big piece of it too. But I think a lot of it was already happening before Trump, because I've been involved with this long enough, and I've had, liberal LGBT friends of mine, you know, stop being friends with me over my politics long before Trump. Even though I'm pretty center right, like, and I don't think I have all the answers. I never come into a conversation in a abrasive way or say, well, if you believe something different than me, you're wrong. But even just my party registration was enough to not, you know, to basically be seen as an enemy of the LGBT community. And that's sadly where we're at. We're finally to a point now within the party, we have a lot of allies and friends. And yet when we leave the party and we go into the sometimes LGBT circles, that's where we're getting the pushback and some of the.
So are you saying that since the log cabin Republicans have endorsed Donald Trump, are you saying that Donald Trump is also center right as you are? Do you view him that way?
I think on most things, yeah. And I think on LGBT issues, you know, he's definitely the most pro-LGBT president, Republican president we've ever had. And he's the first president that ever came into office.
Well, I mean, like, that's a very low bar to set, honestly. I mean, just explain to me what you think he's done. I mean, he wanted to ban trans people from the military. How is that pro-LGBT?
We could have, it's a more complicated policy than that. I don't necessarily agree with every single thing he did, just like you probably didn't agree with every single thing President Obama did. I think on the whole, I agree with more of the policy initiatives than I disagree with them. The trans policy is one that was very complicated, and one of my close friends, Gina Roberts, who's on my board, who's trans, you know, I worked with her a lot and going through to see, you know, what does this actually mean? There were people, basically what the rule says is if you already are trans and you're grandfathered in, if you want to join and you are trans, that's fine.
Well, they had to figure out what the rule meant after he said it, actually, because he just uniformly said it and then they figured it out,
right.
Which is the problem with everything that Trump does. He doesn't know what he's saying. He just says something to inflame things. And then he goes on and he figures it out after he says it, which is exactly what's going on with this coronavirus right now. So it seems like a pretty bold period to say that you are endorsing Donald Trump as a log cabin Republican because he's completely bungling everything that's happened right now. John, are we about to go to commercial?
Yeah, but time out, kids.
Well, on that note.
Rance and Matthew, time out. Hold both those thoughts. Coming up next, gag, after the break, more talking with Matthew about Log Cabin Club, Trump, and the current politics we find ourselves in here on Channel Q. I love that song. I'm so sorry. Rance, my young millennial, you have any idea who sings that?
No.
Not a clue.
I know lots of older things, though.
Matthew Crafty, you're kind of of my generation. Do you know who that was singing the song Surrender?
I don't, actually.
All right. Jason? No.
You gave me the name and I still forgot.
All right. Now I'm feeling like the oddball in the room. That was Cheap Trick singing Surrender, a song
like
often identified with conservative principles. I don't know if you knew that. You can play that at your next cabin gathering, Matthew.
I think we probably will.
It's going right on my playlist.
Gang, we're talking to Matthew Crafty, state director for the Log Cabin Club, and Rance Collins is my co-host for the day.
Yes, I am here.
My young millennial friend, who I adore.
And John, who I tolerate.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. That's another whole show segment we could do, but we won't. Matthew, let's talk about something for a second, because Log Cabin, when it got started, because I remember when it got started, was all about individual responsibility, about free market capitalism, about a strong defense and strong foreign policy, about strong economic principles. A lot of that doesn't seem to be at the center of the current Trumpism. Instead, it's become it's not exactly that. I mean, there are elements who still support free markets and capitalism, but it seems like it's only for certain segments of the economic classes. And there's others who are saying, how can we be strong hawks on foreign policy when we're cuddling up to Russia or to China? It seems like some of those principles have gone to the wayside and been replaced by something new that I'm not even sure has completely morphed or ended up coalescing around any uniting principles. And I'm just saying this as an outsider. I'm not in the party.
Right.
You're in the party. You're under their big tent. You're probably sitting there at your log cabin table having some people come up and say, I'm glad you're here, and other people coming up and telling you, here's a Bible pamphlet, you're going to hell. So how do you sense what's happening within the GOP?
Well, there's a couple different things. So, I mean, I think on that last point of acceptance within the GOP of the log cabin and the LGBT community. I mean, just in the 8 years that I've been actively involved, I've seen a night and day difference in terms of, one by one, state party platforms changing. We're hoping that the national platform this time around coming will also change on this. Log Cabin is an officially chartered volunteer organization within the California Republican Party, which there's only a handful of those organizations that can even meet those requirements. And we, on our first vote, won with the support of over 80% of the delegates. When we were up for every 2 years, you have to be re-voted to hold your charter. We had over 90%. So it's changing through us being ourselves, being there, being present, having the conversations of who we are and why we exist and why we're just as conservative as someone else, even though who we sleep with might be different than what they grew up being told was the norm. So that's on that point. In terms of how all of that fits in with President Trump, I disagree on if we want to start with foreign policy. He has actually increased military spending. It was the Navy and different aspects of the military were depleted. We have increased military spending so that if we need to use the military, we can. But what I think we've learned after the Bush years and to some extent the Obama years is that we can't just step into every foreign policy problem. And the doctrine that Trump, I think, is implementing, which I think is a smart one, is economic leverage. You know, using sanctions instead of sending troops. That is, we still have the world's most powerful economy, and I think when countries step out of line, the first line of defense that he's using, which is very smart, in my opinion, is to do sanctions, is to economically try to rectify the situation rather than send troops. In regards to Russia, the sanctions we have against Russia are much tougher than the sanctions we had against Russia during the Obama administration. In terms of us being energy independent and trying to get the pipeline for that's going into Germany from Russia rerouted, that doesn't help Russia. That helps us. The fact that we are selling weapons to Ukraine, that's something that the Obama administration wouldn't do. Even the ambassador that served under him admitted that that was always an issue.
But let me,
we're
let
doing
me,
that. So none just, of those things let, are let me, actually cozying up to Russia. It's, I think, when he talks about, you know, having a relationship with Putin. Those are the things that I remember when George W. Bush was leaving office, the Obama administration officials said, you know, they squandered that relationship with Russia. We're going to have a reset button. We're going to reset. They were all for that. Now, all of a sudden, we're supposed to hate Russia. They're supposed to be our number one enemy. When all I think Trump is saying is, let's try to see what we can work together on, and the things we can't work together on, we're leaving the sanctions on. And I don't think that that's a crazy proposition.
Matthew, you know what? I'm going to have you come back into the segment because I have so many things to respond to just about everything you said, but we're at the top of the hour and we got to go. So I have
well,
learned
love to come back
next
on, so
time
just let
we'll
me
have
know.
To have a more thorough discussion. But I want to thank you for coming on the sidebar and joining Rance and I today.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to coming back.
All right. Thank you very much. Gang, we'll be back after this with Zoe Nicholson on the history of Alice and the suffragettes and the 19th Amendment here on Channel Q.